Hi, you remember this song, right? Yes, of course you do. The Numa Numa song. Well, that wasn't actually its formal title. The formal title is Drago Stadinte, but most people knew it as the Numa Numa song. The lyrics are in Romanian. It's performed by a Moldovan band, Ozone. It was a hit all across Europe. Then it was made even more famous around the world by a guy in Saddlebrook, New Jersey, named Gary Brolsma. He videotaped himself lip-syncing the song, and, well, I'm sure you saw it. It helped put YouTube on the map. But the interesting thing for me is that the Numa Numa guy, he was lip-syncing sounds. He didn't understand a word of the song, and he didn't care. And we were watching without understanding words of the song, and we didn't care. In fact, I've heard an English version of the song since, and of course, the lyrics aren't at all interesting. It's the sounds that make the song so much fun. So now, just imagine that, like the Numa Numa guy, you have entered that world of pure, pleasurable, unintelligible sound. But then something happens. The door behind you shuts, and then it vanishes. You can't find your way back. You can't re-enter your old world where people open their mouths and they said things you could understand. You can't even ask which direction's home, because anybody who you might find around you, they don't understand you. And even if they could understand you and they answered you, you wouldn't understand them. You are stuck on planet Numa Numa. Well, we have one Planet Numa Numa story coming up. Also, you may have heard the Titanic is in the news. It's only been 100 years, you know, since it hit that iceberg, and it's still making headlines. Well, we have a couple of language-related items on just that, a German-language movie about the Titanic, made by the Nazis, and a modern-day translation of the Morse code messages sent to and from the ship. Also today, we have a conversation with Jess Tom, who has, well, she's got a lot of, I suppose you'd say, attributes. She has a wicked sense of humor. She has an inquiring mind. She has a superhero complex. She has a need to perform. And the last thing she has is Tourette's syndrome.
I have Tourette's syndrome. Biscuit, which you can hear. Biscuit, it involves vocal tics. Biscuit, which is why I say biscuit. Ha! Say cheap! Biscuit so much. And other noises and words.
Much more from Jess Tom later in the pod. First, Planet Numa Numa, which for one little boy was Planet Bengali. He didn't understand Bengali, and that was enough to trap him in a place where, well, that was what they spoke there. And this is one of those stories, you come across it and think, is that true? I mean, it's astonishing. And I have no particular reason to think that it's not true, except that it's an extraordinary story that seems destined for the movies and, who knows, the Academy Awards. Well, I do actually have one language-based reason to question at least the detail of the story. I'll get onto that after we hear from The Big Show's Aaron Schachter.
India's trains are notoriously chaotic and confusing. They certainly were for Saru Brearley. 25 years ago, he and his brother boarded a train searching for lost coins or other valuables. He was 5 at the time. Saru and his brother were separated, and he ended up on another train. Saru fell asleep on that train and woke up 14 hours later on the other side of India, in Calcutta. He couldn't read or write or understand the local Bengali language. There are hundreds of languages in India. He couldn't go home because he didn't know where he was from. Saru became a beggar, one of the many children on the streets of Calcutta. After some time, he was taken in by an orphanage and put up for adoption. An Australian couple adopted him and took him home to Tasmania. Fast forward a couple decades and Saru is still wondering where exactly he's from.
One night I just said to myself, I don't know where my hometown is, but I do know where I ended up, and that was in Calcutta.
So Saru settled on a formula to figure it out using Google Earth.
So I kind of times a rough amount of hours that I was on the train with the kilometres of the speed of the trains. And I sort of put out a ruler from Calcutta out, and it created a radius. And it so happens the very night where I found it, I was just sort of a bit out of the circle, and I zoomed down, and bang, it just came up.
It was the town of Khandwa. Using Google Earth, he'd found the waterfall and dam where he used to play. They were right outside town, just where he'd remembered them. Recently, he made his way home to the neighborhood of Ganesh Talai. But when he got there, as he tells it, his former house was padlocked and derelict. As he stood in front of the building, a crowd gathered. Initially, he says, no one seemed to know his family, but the neighbors kept coming and talking to him.
That's when struck gold, and they said, just wait here for a second, and I'll be back. And when they did come back after 2-3 minutes, they said, now I'll be taking you to your mother.
Saru says the reunion with his mother was awkward.
I think she had a bit of trouble just grasping that, you know, your son, after 25 years, has just reappeared like a ghost.
A ghost, perhaps, but not a complete surprise. Saru says his mother had gone to a fortune teller who told her she'd be reunited with her son someday, and that had given her strength. For The World, I'm Aaron Schachter.
Crazy, huh? This story was reported in some considerable depth in the Australian newspaper, the Brisbane Times. The first thing that I should add from that story is that Saru's native tongue, the one he spoke as a child with his mother before he went on the train to Calcutta, it was Hindi. And once I read that, I thought, well, how come that he couldn't make himself understood in Calcutta? I mean, sure, yeah, there are a lot of Bengali monoglot speakers who wouldn't understand him. But there's also plenty of Hindi spoken in Calcutta. I remember that from reporting there. My translator would tell me from time to time, oh, we're doing this interview in Hindi. So I just wondered, and I thought I should ask our newsroom expert on Indian languages, who is Ritu Chatterjee. You may have heard Ritu in the pod before. She's been on several times talking about Indian languages. And she told me she was surprised by this, too. She says, at the main train station in Calcutta where Saru arrived, nearly all of the porters are from the state of Bihar, which means that they are Hindi speakers and quite possibly might have been able to have communicated with Saru. But Ritu said there are two possible explanations for the story as it stands. One is that Saru spoke a Hindi dialect that wasn't mutually comprehensible with either standard Hindi or any of the other dialects that he might have come across, like the ones that the station porters spoke. The other possibility is that as a 5-year-old, he didn't speak much Hindi in the first place, and that was perhaps compounded by his fear given the situation that he was in, and he was just totally overwhelmed and couldn't put two words together. Who knows? In any case, there are more details to this story that are laid out in this Brisbane Times article, and there are also a bunch of pictures of Saru and his mom and a couple other pictures. So I'll link to that at theworld.org/language. Okay, now on to the Titanic and Morse code. And, well, I'll let the big show's Marco Werman set this one up.
100 years ago, in 1912, this was the state of the art in ship-to-shore communication at sea. Marconi wireless, Morse code transmitted by the still-fledgling technology of radio. It was the latest in high-tech communication, and the ship with the most advanced and powerful Marconi system was the Titanic. The system was used for official messages between the Titanic's officers and port officials ahead in North America, as well as with other ships on the North Atlantic. But it was also a premium service available to the ship's elite passengers, sort of the marine satellite telephone of its day. The messages were mostly tapped out by young men, Marconi operators they were called, and they were carefully transcribed on both ends of the conversation. That's why, unlike the ship's own logs, the contents of these messages survived the calamity that struck the Titanic, and they're the only real-time record of what happened that night. Now, audio artist Suzanne Weber, working with the BBC World Service's Discovery program, has used some of today's most advanced communications technology, voice simulation software, to translate these Morse code messages into spoken words.
Titanic to Cape Race. To Mrs. Milling. I am very well. Calm weather. Wonderful ship. I am enjoying myself. Jacob.
This is Cape Race to Titanic. To Miss Dorothy Gibson, on Titanic. We'll do everything to make you completely happy. Love you, Matt Lee. Jules.
Titanic to Cape Race. To Jules, New York City. Hardly wait to get back. Cable made me awfully happy. Love, Matsy.
This is Californian. Ice warning. 42.3 north, 49.9 west. Three large bergs, 5 mile to southward of us.
CQD, CQD, this is Titanic.
Mount Temple to Titanic. What is the matter?
Cannot read you, but hear my position. 41.44 north, 50.24 west. Come at once. Have struck a berg.
Received. We'll tell Captain.
CQD, SOS, from Titanic. Sinking fast. Come to our assistance.
Cape Race to Californian. SOS, from Titanic. Want immediate assistance.
Titanic to Olympic. We are in collision with the berg. Sinking head down. Engine room getting flooded. SOS. CQD. SOS.
Baltic to Coronia. We're heading for Titanic. But I can't agree to signals.
Asian to Cape Race. Have called Titanic. But no reply. He cannot hear me.
Carpathia to Olympic. Arrived at Titanic's position at daybreak. We saw ice. 25 miles long. Solid. Saw quantity of wreckage and number of boats full of lives. We raised about 670 souls. Titanic has sunk. She went down in 2 hours. Captain, chief, and all engineers are gone. We have two or three officers aboard, and the second Marconi operator, who had been creeping his way through water for several hours.
Those were some of the last Morse code transmissions via Marconi wireless from the Titanic and from some of the ships that came to the rescue of her passengers. And they were brought to life by audio artist Suzanne Weber and the Discovery program of the BBC World Service. And I'll post a link to the entire program at theworld.org/language. Now, you may know that among the many events marking the Titanic anniversary, that there's a 3D version of James Cameron's 1997 blockbuster movie that's out right now. There's also another Titanic movie, a German-language one, that in its own small way is picking up some renewed attention. Here's the big show's Alex Galifant.
Like Cameron's movie, this one's simply titled Titanic. It features a love story and the sinking of the unsinkable ship. But there the similarities end. This Titanic was a piece of Nazi propaganda commissioned by Joseph Goebbels. In this story, the ship sank as a result of British greed. The film opens in the London Stock Exchange, says Randall Beitwerk. He's an expert in Nazi propaganda at Calvin College. The share price of Titanic's parent company, White Star Line, is plunging. But not accidentally. The chairman of White Star, Bruce Ismay, is working to make it happen.
And the way he's going to do that is to suggest that the company is in trouble because of the huge expenses in building the Titanic. That'll drive shares down. Then once the ship is set sail, he'll announce that it's setting a world's record pace, and that'll drive shares up, and supposedly he'll make his fortune.
An evil British plutocrat, scheming to profit off the backs of everyone else. During the film, Ismay urges the ship's captain to go faster and faster, offering him $1,000 for each hour the ship arrives ahead of schedule. Now, of course, there's a voice of reason, someone pressing Captain Smith to follow a safer course. That's a fictional first officer, a German, yes, he's German in the film, by the name of Peterson. Ian Garden is the author of The Third Reich's Celluloid War.
He is the archetypal officer who keeps on warning the captain, you're going too fast, we've not got enough lifeboats, we're going to hit an iceberg, and they refuse to listen to him.
And you'd expect him to go down with the ship, and he almost does, but he's saved by doing a good deed. He hears a small child crying who has been left by his plutocratic mother to die. He rescues the young girl, carries her to a waiting lifeboat where, by the way, his love interest is waiting, and both he and the young girl are saved. So the hero is a German.
Titanic was an incredibly expensive film for its time. The special effects were state-of-the-art, and it took a long time to make. Too long, as it turned out. Work on the film began in 1940, when Germany's military was conquering all. But by the time the film's ready for its premiere screening in Berlin, things aren't going so well, and Joseph Goebbels has second thoughts. Again, Randall Beitwerk.
The propaganda leadership says this really isn't a very good idea to show scenes of panic, mass death, and so forth going on, because, of course, now we're in the spring of 1943. British and American bombers are coming over day and night. The Stalingrad defeat is clear to everybody. So the film just doesn't look propagandistically good.
The Nazis' Titanic was a piece of propaganda based on a tragedy, but the film seemed only to beget further tragedies. Ian Garden says, look what happened to the director, Herbert Selpin.
He was overheard complaining one day about the war getting in the way of the making of his film.
Selpin's complaints got back to Goebbels, who demanded an apology.
But Selpin was a very stubborn man. He refused to apologise. He was put into a prison cell, and the next day he was found hanged dead from his braces in that cell.
Was it suicide? Was it murder? Most think the latter. In any case, that was a single man. What happened later, well, you couldn't write it.
The main tragedy is that the ship that they used to film the outside scenes on was a ship called the Cap Arcona. Now, that ship, at the end of the war, was sunk by mistake by the Allies as it was carrying, of all people, 5,000 concentration camp prisoners, and they were all killed.
Hitler had met his end days earlier. The remaining Nazi leaders were trying to cover up their crimes by removing people left in the camps. Some also think the Nazis disguised the ship as a troop carrier, almost inviting an attack.
So there were far more people killed on that ship than were actually killed in the real Titanic. It's a terribly sad story.
For The World, I'm Alex Galifant.
Wow, that's just awful. And here's an odd thing, but I'm actually going to try and cheer you up with a story about Tourette syndrome. Really? Now, people come across Tourette's in one of two ways. Either because they know someone with it and they know of it as a debilitating condition, or they come across it in jokes. There are lots of Tourette's jokes. Sufferers have to put up with a slew of tics, totally unstoppable, involuntary tics. They're verbal, they're sometimes physical, they can be mild, they can be really intense. Either way, you're blurting out words, often the same ones over and over again. They're usually completely irrelevant to the conversation that you're having, and sometimes they're more than irrelevant, sometimes they're inappropriate as well. So you can see where the jokes come from. Which leads us to Jess Tom. She has the syndrome, and she's decided to incorporate the jokes in raising awareness about the condition, which is kind of brilliant because a lot of these verbal tics, well, they're funny. And Tom thinks that no one needs to be ashamed of thinking they're funny. In fact, it's kind of helpful in learning more about Tourette's. So she's assumed this Tourette's superhero persona. She has a cape that she wears and, you know, underwear over the tights thing and everything. And she has a website, which is called Tourette's Hero, where she posts some of her verbal tics. Like, here's one of them. Bye-bye, polar bear. Apropos of who knows what. Oh, here's another one. Totally surreal. Kanye West killed Rupert Bear today. She's got a bear thing going there. She also says the word biscuit a lot. Here she is talking with the BBC's Jim Naughty. In the conversation, you'll hear a couple of pips like this. That's when she swears, when she doesn't mean to. It just pops out. Here goes.
Tourette's, I have Tourette's syndrome. Biscuit, which you can hear. Biscuit, it involves vocal tics. Biscuit, which is why I say biscuit. Ha, say sheep. Biscuit so much, and other noises and words.
Yes.
Ha, biscuit. And as well as biscuit vocal tics, which are often thought about with Tourette's, biscuit. The tics also include motor tics, so biscuit making movements, biscuit that I can't control.
Yeah.
So biscuit.
Do the tics change?
Biscuit.
Yeah. Do the words change or the phrases change?
Same change. Yeah. Biscuit. Tourette's is a condition that waxes and wanes. Biscuit. So it changes over the course of somebody's biscuit life and can change over months. Biscuit. But also tics can change over the course of biscuit of a day. Biscuit. And I have happy birthday. Happy birthday. I have regular tics. Biscuit, like biscuit, and happy birthday.
People often think, I think it's a sort of famous urban myth, I suppose, that people with
biscuit.
Tourette's syndrome tend to swear all the time, but that's not true in every case, is
biscuit.
It?
It's not true in the majority of cases. Only 10% of people have involuntary biscuit swearing tics called coprolalia. I'm one of the biscuit. I'm one of the 10% biscuit. The swearing tics is a very that I have. Biscuit a very small percentage of the biscuit noises, involuntary noises and movements.
You've set up
Sand.
Tourette's Hero.
The
website. What's the point? Are you really just trying to make it a place where people can learn there are other people who've got the same problem?
The point of Tourette's Hero is to celebrate the creativity, biscuit, and humour of Tourette's, and to reclaim the laughter associated with Tourette's. Tourette's Hero isn't a website, biscuit, just for people with Tourette's. It's a website for everybody. Biscuit, what we do is make the tics that I've said available that are often really funny and surreal, or biscuit have strong visual imagery, and encourage artists biscuit to respond creatively and make artwork and upload that to the site. Biscuit, you can vote on lots of different tics and browse the very diverse biscuit range of phrases that I've said involuntarily. It's also biscuit. I also write biscuit a daily blog. Biscuit, which covers all my experience. Covers a sort of wide range of my experiences. Biscuit living with the condition.
And I suppose a lot of those experiences involve the way that people have reacted in public.
Biscuit.
When they've come across you and didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, biscuit. And I think biscuit. Before I started biscuit Tourette's Zero, I could often concentrate on the negative reactions, and it was easy to remember them and to think about the problems that biscuit Tourette's faced. Through writing the blog and having that space biscuit to reflect on it every day, I realised that Tourette's means that I have amazing conversations with people that I wouldn't biscuit have otherwise, biscuit, and lots of opportunities. And so the reactions, some very negative and distressing reactions biscuit, but also some amazing positive conversations and insights.
Do you think from the time you've had the condition, do you think that people generally in public
biscuit.
Are more rather than less
biscuit.
Understanding?
Biscuit. I think it's not just about Tourette's. I think attitudes towards disability are changing and are opening up. Biscuit. I think there's biscuit. What we're trying to do is, I think, part of a greater awareness and movement within biscuit within. From disabled people in sort of speaking out, celebrating and changing biscuit attitudes towards disability through humour and creative means. Biscuit, and I think one of the important ways humour can help is to biscuit engage people and then biscuit give them an opportunity to learn about something.
Jess Tom, more on her at theworld.org/language. I'll put a link to her site and do a blog post myself there. And that's it for the pod this time. I'm painfully aware this one was a little longer coming out than, well, some of the other ones. And there may be another 10-day, two-week gap till the next one, I'm afraid. I have this big project that I'm working on. It's not particularly language-related, though it has its linguistic moments. It'll be done mid to late May, thank goodness. So many more pods after that. Thanks for bearing with me. And here's a prize, not just for bearing with me, for listening all the way through today. The ultimate version of the Numa Numa song. This one's from a TV show in Poland, so these singers, they don't understand the words they're singing either. Don't forget to check out The World in Words on Facebook. Also, you can follow me on Twitter. I tweet a bunch of language items I don't get to do in the pod. My Twitter handle is Patricox, Patricox. See you next time.